our regular council meeting. And while people just straighten, I'm just going to continue along. Tuesday, November 22nd, 2022. I call the meeting to order. Are there any changes to the agenda? Councilor Muse.
I'd like to add 8.5 shrub removal.
Shrub removal, and you'll lead the discussion on that. Is there a seconder for that motion? For that, and seconded by Councilor Gidney. All in favor? Are there any other additions to the agenda? If not, we did it all. Accessibility committee update. So I am going to be Ms. Johnson, our accessibility coordinator.
Fairly small, but I'm going to be saying everything that's on the slide. I'm representing the Accessibility Advisory Committee. We have two members here. Mackenzie Colt is present, and Tyler Roy, and of course, counselors that sit on the committee. So I'll just put this in the slideshow. It's really just an update, reminding everybody of our goals, the work we've done to date, and always looking for support as we move forward. So as a background, just reminding you that 1 in 3 people of Nova Scotia have some form of a disability or impairment. It might be mobility, hearing, sight, dexterity, pain, memory, cognition, or development. These might be temporary, periodic, or permanent. And of course, they're not all visible. So if this is not you, it is probably your friends or family. And just the context again, that disabilities really are created by barriers. As the cartoon indicates, you can't ask the same of everybody. So asking all these animals to climb a tree will work very well for the monkey and not so well for the fish. And being accessible means barrier-free, or at least options of barrier-free. And one of the biggest barriers is attitudinal, as this test giver. And those can actually be the hardest ones to remove. And that is considered discrimination. The word ableism is when you're not even aware of the barriers you're creating. Recognizing this, Nova Scotia has in place their act, about 5 years old already, is in the Department of Justice because it is a human rights issue. We're trying to be proactive, not reactive. The way the Human Rights Commission works now is that it is in a reactionary way. We make a complaint and then the barrier is removed. We're trying to have them not exist. So it starts with the provincial government, down through the public sector body, then finally private. Being a municipality, we are one of the prescribed public sector bodies under the Act, with a mandate to create an accessibility advisory committee for the First Voice. Okay, we have two members here with us, thank you. And we have, with their input, developed our municipal plan, which I'll go through very high level overview to identify, remove, and prevent barriers. Harder step at the end of that is how to assess the effect of those actions. The 6 categories we have under the Act in our plan, I'll go through each one, just letting you know there are new standard committees developing these standards from lived experience. They're not all in place. It is rolling out over time with this ambitious timeline. So to the meat of it, in our built environment, our sort of to-do list in the plan starts with all municipal properties being assessed with making priority recommendations. This was actually an easy part done early on in my role here. We ask that council approve annual budgets for accessibility, and thank you, we're on track there. A Yes, that building permits capture accessibility-related requests, so if a development permit is looking for a ramp, or the building renovation is looking at bathrooms, we can collect some data and give out some related information. Want all municipal projects to be reviewed with an accessibility lens. We're not 100% there, we're getting better. And accessibility grants are promoted to beyond the municipality, so that is the businesses and the residential homeowners. We're trying to share information with them. The next category would be education, that we don't kind of control the curriculum, of course, of the schools, but so we treat it like a community outreach. We have awareness campaigns. I've done some podcasts to different medias, in-person sessions, webinars. We have some flyers. Articles have gone out, some social media, of course. Trying to engage with more people with disabilities, so be it through organizations like Home Support, Senior Safety, Queens Manor. Also reaching out to builders, businesses, the intermediaries. Employment. So just a reminder that all of these categories have their own standards that we're somewhat trying to follow. But in our plan, we want to see that the municipality ensures an accessible workplace. There are accommodations at all levels of job opportunities. That means starting at the recruiting stage through interviewing, onboarding, in order to retain people. It might mean an alternative format or an assistive device, just the physical space. It can mean a range of things. It's usually not very expensive, but we have to be open to these things. In the plan, we ask if there be an accommodation fund or a staff resource person in place to support the people with disabilities. There is a legal duty to accommodate. Right now, I guess our fund would come from the accessibility budget, which then is taken away from built environment projects, but just so you have that context. We continue disability awareness training to staff, both individually according to their role, and also more global training. We consider tracking the number of employees with disabilities. Sort of the aim is to be reflecting your population in all ways. When there was a diversity survey done, only 7 of 58 self-identified. Other conversation. We'll continue with the categories. Information and communication, of course, very important. We're looking at the digital documents need to be screen readable. And again, one of my advisors has helped me with that because he uses a screen reader. We use alternative text in our social media. We have captions on our videos. We have ASL available on request. We're working on improved audio in council chambers, and we support QR codes on public interpretive panels such that material could be screen read. We put a phone on a poster at a site, and you could get the information. Goods and services. There are a few things that align with built environment, like lowering sections of your service counters. We also looked at considering a fund for accommodations for customers, such as the ASL or video relay, real-time transcription. You absolutely have to provide it upon request. Again, I think right now it might come from the accessibility budget, from a more working budget, and keep in mind. Of course, we have to welcome service dogs, support personnel. We promote the existing, and we try to build an inventory of accessible recreational equipment. There's some in the gym. We have the Moby mat at the beach, and some more things coming in that vein. We have some mini ellipticals on loan. And we want to recognize vulnerable persons in the emergency planning. That's happening at a more provincial level, but I've had some good talks with Brian Hatt and Shelley Walker on that. And our CMC. Last but not least, category is transportation. So we don't run a bus system ourselves as a municipality, but we support Queens County Transit, both in budget and promotions. I certainly invite them to our meetings. They support us and share information. We want to detail a parking and sidewalk remediation plan. It's not just how many spots, but where is the curb cut? Is there upright signage? Are there access aisles? We need to prioritize snow removal areas to maintain a barrier-free path from parking to this. ensuring that crosswalks are well marked. This has improved over the past few years, I'm sure you've noticed. And the use of tactile indicators, that means they're called Twizzies. So on the sidewalk, you see around LCLC, pain detectable where you reach an edge, so like a street or a staircase. This will be guided by provincial guidelines. So trying to keep in my 10 minutes, I'll just give a few highlights of the accessibility improvements that hopefully you've been appreciating. At Queen's Place, some of the toilet seats did not have any back supports, so in the accessible stalls, we put those in. There are sensor buttons to the entry doors, which Tyler loves, and there's supposed to be one outside this door forthcoming. The signage improved for the washrooms and the elevator, standard signage. There are now rail posts at the top bleachers to help people, just any balance issues and visual too. Yeah, proposals for universal washroom. The Town Hall Arts and Culture Center, or ASTER, has a stage lift installed. Some assistive devices are almost ready to be used. The technician has been in. Ramped entry is forthcoming, and there's a proposal for a lift to the second floor. At Beach Meadows Beach, I hope you've all enjoyed the Moby Mat. Sand walkers are coming. That's like a standing walker with wheels. And you have approved a new facility in a separate budget line item, which means it doesn't have to come out of the accessibility budget. And there have been a few sort of programs, as much as we don't do a ton of programming from the municipality. We have been doing sort of hobby development for people with disabilities, drama, painting, sculpture, garden, and dance, music, and the mini elliptical. So those were community help board grants, so I tried to go beyond the built environment. That is a whirlwind of our plan, and I was going to ask if my members.
For me, I guess it was just keeping, on a new built environment. First, this is, I like to get into anyone and to read it.
By yourself, independently.
And I like the lane door to be moved the opposite way, so I don't have to go turn and back.
As much as we're starting with the municipal, to be a rule model and helping the businesses find their way, try to connect them to grants and that kind of thing. But of course, it's towards independence and participation.
Yeah.
The last chance is. Which, as under the Act, the demand for ASL is very high, but the supply is not there. So we have to go through the Halifax office. Is expensive and hard to get. Sometimes get somebody nearby.
That's for some family who can use something to Zoom.
Yes. Tabitha is ASL with the Ark in Bridgewater. She stepped in when I couldn't get somebody from Halifax. So I guess I just open up to any questions.
Any questions or comments from council to Ms. Johnson?
I would just like to thank Lisa and her committee that you guys have done leaps and bounds in the last few years. It's apparent, and there's been a lot of work, a lot to do. And I just want to thank you and your committee for all the work that you are doing.
Chair of the committee.
Other comments? Councilor Brown?
I'm fairly new to this, and I'm impressed with how much has been done, and I really look forward to seeing how much more will be accomplished, because I think there's no end in sight as long as the will is there, and you guys are doing a great job.
Councilor Charlton?
I've been noticing a lot of these changes popping up with Enders, the polls, and the players for the sensory button. I had a constituent reach out to me when the Moby Mat went in, and she was so excited because her husband, who's
Deputy Mayor Fancy.
Yes, one thing I'd like to see, that I know, it's a lot of times comes back and is paid for by the region, but I think probably should get his lights over by the ordinance. There's, be able to get the, you can be able to use on your phone, be able to, if you set up properly with the lights, be able to switch the buttons yourself, all by the, by your phone. Because even over there, the one, the telephone pole in particular, you got like a button here and a button here, and if, sometimes if you're blind, you could reach the wrong button, and you don't even know which one you press, because you heard go off. If you, if you've got that, if you've got that, so you have the connection between your phone and the light, do it from your phone, you'd be able to switch everything.
There was a pilot in Halifax working on that. And interestingly enough, for another perspective, our advisor, who is blind, doesn't love phone technology, since he'll use it as a phone, but he has one hand for his dog and one hand on his cane, and he doesn't want to play with the phone. Always different sides of it, but I have seen that being useful in the city.
A lot of times with that, I know, like, I know one fellow who's blind, so he talks on his phone all the time, and has communication that way.
And Tyler, I just, did I hear you say that you can't get those buttons?
No, I have to dart. I gotta dart it.
Oh, you darted it with.
And that's not good, right? But, yeah.
If there are no other questions, thank you, Mackenzie. Thank you, Mackenzie, for being here. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Ms. Johnson, for all the work. And we look forward to the municipality setting an example and assisting businesses as we move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. Second staff presentation is Eric Levy, who is going to give us an update on our diversity and inclusion action team. We recognize Eric as our clerk, and he's also tasked with the diversity and inclusion action team.
Yeah.
And I noticed.
Shortly, as we are starting to share more and more in our diversity and inclusion work. But as you may recall, back a while back, Linda Earle, who's the team lead on our committee, gave an update, and we try to give updates to council twice a year on what's going on with the diversity and inclusion action team and some of the work that's going on. So Linda was unable to be here this major accomplishments since the last update. There are new human resource policies at the region. They've been updated and approved by you. And so currently we're in a rollout phase, and what that has been looking like is myself and Joanne, the Director of Corporate Services, as well as Angela, the Administrative Assistant, have been going to different work sites to hold presentations and question and answer, because with a lot of new policies, the changeover, change can be intimidating and scary for some. So giving the opportunity for people to ask questions. And also there's a lot of new policies geared towards equity and inclusion that need a little help getting people to understand. They can be complicated and they're very nuanced. And so having those opportunities to explain them has, I think, been welcome and really good experience for us to, on our side, get into how they're going to look and how they're going to play out. Other recent accomplishments, there's been a focus on increasing community visibility of groups who have been historically underrepresented or left out. So you may have noticed on the Visitor Information Center, the steps are painted in pride flag colors, so picnic tables and benches that have done the same. Diversity and inclusion, our work has been seen in our parade floats and represented in that way. Elise and I have done talks with QCCR, help increase visibility of groups, but also the work we're doing. And then that's in an effort to bring people on board, help people as much as we're putting out, hopefully we get back. And getting feedback from community is important in this work as well. So hopefully by this increased visibility, it also allows for people to feel welcome in the community, or more welcome, but then also allows people to reach out and say, I think this is something that we could look at, and we'll say, absolutely, let's work on it together. Things that have continued, our other community support. We are running the second year of the Diversity and Inclusion Small Grants Program. So that pot of money is $10,000 for grants of up to $1,000 for community groups who are looking to do work in diversity and inclusion. And so anyone watching, or if you know anyone who wants to apply for a grant, I would welcome those. And also there's been a lot of work with other municipalities. Over the last 6 months, I've been contacted by a number of municipalities, and I've contacted a number of municipalities to say, what are you doing in your community? How's it working? How can we work that here? Let's share some ideas. And I will say, province-wide, the priority of increased diversity and inclusion and equity work is really growing exponentially, and it's become really collaborative at sort of the municipal provincial level, if that makes sense, and us working together through all. Without serious accomplishments, there are usually some challenges, so to be open and about those. Committee composition has been a challenge since the start of our work, so I'm really pleased that we have a full membership now. I think this is the first time I've seen a set of 10 people on it. I hope everyone stays, and we can carry on working at our full capacity. And then we have tried to dabble in some community programming and had some attempts, and there's been some interest, but generally slow uptake, but I'm confident that with continued efforts that those things will take off. So if we think back to last year, the grant program started off quite slowly, and it wasn't until the second half of our fiscal year that those applications started to roll in. And I think that we'll see a similar trend this year, and our attempts on community programming and outreach will continue to grow. Change and new efforts can take quite a long time to uptake. Some current projects that are being worked on and with the committee and with staff are first the Welcoming Communities Initiative. So with several departments and with Elise, we've been looking at the potential for a local immigration partnership. And so what that is generally an organization of groups or community stakeholders who work together with the common effort of welcoming newcomers to the community. And so a local immigration partnership provincial legislation that sets out that public sector entities or prescribed public bodies will have to have a plan in place on how they are going to dismantle racism and hate and address the systemic barriers within their organizations. So similar to that of the accessibility plans, there will be plans in place. I think the anticipated date is sometime in 2023 that municipalities would have a plan in place on how they're going to look at their organizations and what plans they're going to, steps they're going to take to dismantle things that they have in place that are not favorable to anybody. So I'll be working heavily on that, and I'll be working with you on this, I hope, and we'll go forward with that together. And then, as always, there's opportunities for further education, so continued education opportunities for staff and council, as well as hopefully there will be a more highlighted version of diversity and inclusion training in any new council orientation and new staff orientations as they arise. So on a personal note, I would say that one of the major successes over the last year, and as you can see in the last slide, diversity and inclusion work within Region of Queens is becoming much more collaborative. And I would say even at a provincial level is much more collaborative. And I would say that in many instances, when someone or an organization hires a diversity and inclusion person, that's seen as that's their job. They're here to fix the problems. But I can safely say that within our organization, it's broadening out and everyone's becoming a contributor, which is how any training I've ever done or anything I've ever spoke to or been told is how it should be. It's very much everyone's duty for finding these things. And so I would just commend staff and council and community that I've worked with on recognizing the need for that collaboration and working together. So if we look to the future, as I mentioned before, the requirements as they come out for the new legislation on dismantling racism and hate will help further guide our and help reframe our frameworks on the legislative side. And then plans to further encourage and grow the collaborative nature of our diversity work explore options for increased programming and funding. There are lots more provincial grants and other funding streams that are coming out in diversity and inclusion work, so exploring those. So that's a very sort of quick overview of the last few months, and thank you for your time.
And I thank you, Eric. And before I ask for any comments from council, I'd just like to say the flying of our Grand Council and the appointment of our day in September as a day of reflection was also a great task that you undertook and accomplished. Questions, comments to council? Councilor Gidney?
Yes, I like when you said diverse personalities. I like when you use that term, okay. Diverse personality. But we've been talking and talking for quite some time, but now we're walking the walk. So thank you for that, because it's very important that it's not just talk, but we actually do are doing something. I feel that you're actually doing something. And I appreciate that very much. Sometimes it's hard to understand everything that's going on and what we are doing or not doing. And when we start walking the walk, it's more important.
Other comments, questions? Eric, I know Sarita's here, my neighbor, a member, newest member of your committee.
Yeah, team members. I haven't officially met them yet. They are with Elise now, but
Councilor Brown.
Seems kind of today was a great day to have this proposal, because I came across something on social media today that said, we don't fear change, we fear being forced to change. And I think having committees like this and the education process internalizes the change so that we're not being forced to change, we're learning how to change on our own, and it takes that fear out of it. I think that's probably one of the biggest steps we can do. And familiarity doesn't breed contempt, it breeds acceptance. I think it's very important, and I love the work that's happening so far, and once again, I'd like to see how far it goes.
Questions, comments?
Erica, are you looking at, like, going to the schools and talking about some of this stuff?
So we have done some work with schools, and we have committee members who work within the schools, and so when there have been times when we're engaged from by schools to go, and there have been school groups that have accessed the grants, and in various ways we are involved with schools, so yes, to some extent.
Because today we was at a place and there was a lot of graffiti, and I'm wondering if, like, if the students know that this is wrong, you know, maybe they might stop doing the graffiti.
Right.
Councilor Romero?
Presentation, Eric. Maybe you could just touch a little more on the grants, like what groups could apply and what it can be used for. Information about it?
Yeah, so it's pretty open, and Elise can add to this as well. But the grant, the intention of the grant is for community groups who want to do some sort of programming or increase in diversity and inclusion practices. So that could be an event, it could be an educational situation. So some things that have happened in the past, there was a grant given for Maui Omi Gathering on National Day for Truth and Reconciliation at the Hank Snow. There have been girls in sports groups that have received the grants. There was one community organization that received a grant when they wanted to hold a seniors and youth darts night or darts event. So it's wide ranging, and so if anyone is interested in applying, then they can reach out to one of us, and happy to talk over what they may have in mind. And more often than not, the projects are things fit. So, yeah.
Could that do something like, we have a lot of people moving in the area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people from Toronto and such, but we have a lot of different ethnic groups and such as move in. And people sometimes do not know how to meet people and do things. Could you have a supper or things such as like this, as trying to say, hey, you're new to community, like you to get together and stuff like that?
Yeah, and those are part of the discussions around welcoming communities, and the local immigration partnership is having people at the table who come up with those ideas and be like, okay, so we represent this organization, and maybe our business wants to hold a supper for newcomers, and we can help support that either with maybe our resupply person courses, or if there's a grant that can be applied for. So we are really discussing ways that we can encourage actual events and actual things to happen to be more welcoming for new residents. Because you're absolutely right, Deputy Mayor, there are a lot of new people moving to the communities, and to have a more organized approach on how we welcome people into our communities and make them feel part of it, I think is definitely necessary. Sort of a pivotal time to start looking at that. So the possibilities are endless, really. So welcome any ideas. Yeah.
No further questions. I thank you for your time, and I think it's wonderful how these two positions have morphed together and offset one another and move ahead in your direction. Any petitions to table 4.0? 5.0, public question comment session. This is an opportunity for anyone who is visiting to address council. The rules are quite simple. You simply wait to be recognized. You stand at the mic, provide your name and your civic address, and it's your opportunity to make any statements you would like to council. So, and 5 minute max. So is there anyone who wishes to address council this evening? Anyone who wishes to address council? Hearing none. approval of the regular council minutes, November 8th, 2022. Moved by Councilor Charlton, seconded by Councilor Hawks. All those in favor? Passed. Sale of municipal property, 7.1. This is in relation to the public hearing we just held. Thank you, Christine. There is a recommendation within the package. Councilor Gidney.
I recommend that the council agrees with Queens Municipality enter into a purchase and sale agreement with Queens Neighborhood Cooperative Housing Limited for properties identified as 7002792, 7004023, 7001798, and 7002477 for the price of $1.
And that's seconded by Councilor Amaro. Are there any further questions council may have of Director McLeod? Director McLeod, could you just give us a brief timeline on what happens next for those who are unaware among our guests?
Yeah, I guess essentially if council approves the recommendation, staff will prepare a purchase and sale agreement for the review of the Cooperative Housing Limited with a closing date, and I guess that would be subject to discussions with the Cooperative Housing Limited and continuing the process for the agents of the program.
No questions? Any questions? Deputy Mayor Bayosi?
I always like to ask the question because I didn't want to vote in the other place. Part of that group, I don't vote, then it doesn't mean I'm not voting against. That
I don't understand what you just said.
Okay.
Conflict of interest.
Oh, you have a conflict of interest. So you should just simply declare a conflict of interest.
So I'm just
because you're a member
now, yes,
of the group and you withdraw and sit over on the side.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Deputy Mayor Fancy is an active member of the committee. Councilor Charlton?
I just wanted to ask for clarification when it came to conflict of interest. I thought that was only...
It's any pecuniary or financial benefit. So as a member of a committee not related to council, as an active member, mm-hmm, then he has... more than just he's bringing his personal interest on something that he can influence and affect. Is how it's always been. As members of committees appointed by council, you're never in a conflict of interest. But because he's on a committee that's not appointed by council, then that is deemed as a conflict of interest. And this is a matter that the committee is dealing with. That this is a matter that we're dealing with that's an outside committee.
Is it an outside committee?
Yes, this is not a committee of council. The Queen's Care Society is not appointed committee of council. Any other questions? If not, I'm going to call.
Nope. No, I was just going to say that I'm kind of excited the whole this project goes ahead because we all know that we need a lot of housing in Queens County, and it's a good start. You know, this looks like something that'll move us forward. It may not all be low income housing, but it's housing that will move people up the ladder, maybe open up other housing for people at different levels. So I'm excited about it.
Call for the question. All those in favor? contrary?
I'd like to stay here.
No, you can go back now, Debbie. Oh, yes, you have to stay there.
Yeah.
No, you were on. Right, yes, yes, the next one's the track.
Yeah.
So Counselor Fancy is again declaring a conflict of interest because of his very active involvement with the Queens County Track Society. So there is a recommendation within your package. Counselor Charlton?
I move the county provide grant funding approval to community investment fund reserve account, County Track Society, in an amount of up to $250,000. And that funding not be released until Queens County Track Society provides satisfactory proof of its financial resources to complete the 5 feet by 190 feet to the soccer field and 400 meters plain gravel running back portion of the project as outlined in the application. And further that, no eligible cost is received under the project tenure for the full size by 190 feet to the soccer field and 400 meters gravel running back portion of the new capital project on more than $1 million before HST. And further that, a fully is in effect prior to funding.
And that's seconded by Counselor Brown. And Ms. Roberts, we'd like to give a bit of background. This is through this our investment fund.
That is correct. It would be a new capital project. So this dates back to, oh my God, probably. So it's been a long time coming. Most of the information or all the information is provided in the report, but I'll just overview the main points. Queens County Track Society will be constructing a full-size turf soccer field and 400-meter eight-lane gravel track for community use at Liverpool Regional High. In addition, the total overall project will have added features, fencing, lighting, and some other physical activity and sport enhancements. The funds being requested from the Region of Queens Municipality under the Community Investment Fund are for the full-size turf field and 400-meter eight-lane gravel track portion of the overall project. There's a proposed 10-year tri-party land use agreement for community use of schools that is currently in the process of being executed by those involved. Society has applied for provincial and federal infrastructure funding for the other portions of the project costs. The additional gap in funding will be met through funding by private partners, fundraising, donations, corporate sponsorship, etc., which would be expected to be fundraised by the society. Total eligible costs for the track and turf field portion of the project are projected well in excess of $1 million before HST, allow the society to access up to the maximum of $250,000 under the Community Investment Fund based on their total eligible costs. As noted in the report, the projected start date for the project is April 2023, which is next budget year for us. So the recommendation is for funding from the Community Investment Fund reserve account.
Which has a good balance. Any further discussion on this matter? Counselor Charlton?
I just think this is really exciting for our community. We've got a lot of great athletes from out of this county with bare bones, so have something like this here is.
Sarah, she's home doing it at her house and practicing. It's quite remarkable what she's accomplished.
Counselor Brown?
I think what Councilor Charlton said with the athletes that came away, and I know over the years a lot of track and field athletes in Queens County have had to travel to the Valley to find facilities and coaching. I think this gives some of our athletes and people who may not have gone into the sport an opportunity with a place to go. I think it can only grow, and it'll be a very good facility.
And I think it's important to note that this is not new money. This is money which is placed every year in a budget under Community Investment Fund, and it's broken down into operating capital, and any and all nonprofit groups in Queens County can make application to this funding, and it's based upon very specified percentages. So any groups that are looking for and needing funds can apply through this community investment fund to access funds.
Absolutely. And funds they're accessing in the project.
Any further questions or comments? If not, I'll ask for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Passed. Now, Deputy Mayor Mears. Fancy. I am going to sit him up here. Letter of mandate, 8.1. Discussion. Who would like to open discussion on this matter? Brown?
I'll open it because I opened it last time, I guess. I'd like to thank the pool committee for coming back with this letter of mandate that cleared up a lot of the problems that I personally and some of the other councillors had with the terms of reference. I think this clears that up, and I'm hoping that we can move forward rather rapidly with the pool because it's something we definitely need. We look at the cost of amortizing a pool, and most things say pool lasts 25 years. The one in Milton is 55 years old now. I learned to swim in that pool as a small child. I could have great grandchildren at my age that could still be swimming in that same pool.
Any other points? Councilor Charlton?
Are we looking for a recommendation to adopt this letter of mandate?
To put it forward to the next.
I would like to move to put this letter of mandate forward.
I'd like to second it.
Seconded by Councilor Brown. Comments? Call for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Passed. Operation Policy 8.2, Public Art. Just a quick rationale for why and the importance of it and what it doesn't mean, like hundreds of thousands of dollars of public art.
Right, yeah. So with the municipal government for all vision framework, the diversity and inclusion framework, there is a statement in there about a fund for public art. This year it was budgeted to have $5,000 for public art, and with the purchase of public art, it was identified that we need a policy surrounding the funding selection, purchase, any donation payments, or removal of public arts, as it would be the use of public funds to purchase such an item. Currently, my understanding is that there's only one, this is the only project that I know of that would apply under this policy. Not to say that there may not be others in the future, but currently, this policy would allow the diversity and inclusion action team to move forward in looking for a public art installation.
Comments or questions? I think it's a good idea. Move it forward to recommendation. Councillor Brown?
I did have a question when I was reading it, and I was just curious if the Lost at Sea Memorial, would that be considered public art where it's a sculpture? Would it fall under this?
It wouldn't fall
in some way,
because it's not public art that we're developing on our own. It's done by a committee that can call something. So this policy really just outlines the sort of parameters around the purchasing for things that we would buy or that we would take on of our own volition. There may be other installations like that. Upkeep should another organization be able to adapt.
Okay. Yeah. I just didn't want us to be in the process of one project and have a policy that may interfere with that.
Absolutely.
I just have a further question on that, because some people may well consider the monument as art, that the,
yeah,
the that the Historical Society is giving us. And it does note in number 11 that we do reserve the right to decline to consider or accept any gift, bequest, or donation of art. So while that's a monument, I look at it as a piece of art in many ways. So I guess it could be or could not be considered art.
It could be. I think in a situation like that, there is subjectivity to it, and that would be a broader discussion for council to have. But for the intention of this policy, it would be things that the region purchases or maintains for its own ownership. And in which case, yes, the council does reserve, right? Minor consider that much like it would any other project. So for referencing that project specifically, get an opportunity to decline that request as well. So it's similar, but just here it's worded in for a specific situation more so than what it could be maybe referenced.
If Deputy Mayor Fancy?
So it seems like the Tiger Warrington, that was brought in by another group, like ownership.
Again, I mean, in certain circumstances, if that were to happen now after the adoption of this policy, it may apply. So if there are projects in the future that council considers to be public art that would be ownership of the region, then we would have considerations potentially under this policy.
If council is comfortable with this policy, I'll look for a recommendation to bring it forward at our next meeting. Councilor Brown?
I recommend that we bring this forward at the next council meeting as a recommendation item.
And then seconded by Councilor Church. Any further discussion? If not, I'll ask for the question. All those in favor? Passed. Councilor Hawks?
Yeah,
8.3 is within our packet, and you asked for a discussion of both this policy.
Yes, I'd like to discuss about moving evening meetings, the ones in council chambers, back to a day meeting because of the lack of gallery and such. And community ones, the evening ones, I think that would be better representation of us and better use of staff time.
So you're suggesting that the April, June, October, January meetings remain as off-site evening meetings,
right,
and that the evening meetings currently held on the last Tuesday of every month become day meetings. So that's the point the Councillor Hawks wishes to discuss. So the floor is open for your consideration. Councillor Gidney?
I appreciate his comments. I think it's a comment. I feel one evening month is a resident's opportunity to attend. I think that's the important thing, have the opportunity. I think that should, that this going the way it is, so that opportunity still remains, not just in the, when we're off-site, but here also.
But, Councilor Romero?
I have to agree as well. It gives people that's working every day an opportunity to attend, at least chance to attend.
Other comments? Mr. Brown?
I think I have to agree with Councillor Hawks that it would free up some staff time, where we have a lot of people here in the evenings that work a long day. It's a lot of travel time for some councillors, myself included. We have four meetings that we set up for evening meetings in other areas. We have 2 months that we don't have at the evening meeting, July and August, So you're really looking at six months or six meetings a year that we have in the evening, and tonight is an exception, but we very seldom have many people in the gallery. So I think we get better reception from people on daytime meetings. We end up with more people coming, and our regulars generally don't show up for the evening meetings. So I would happy to go back to daytime meetings.
Other opinions of council? Councilor Charlton?
I'm concerned with the thought of changing evening meetings back to daytime. Just heard from our diversity inclusion, but how we're proudly branding ourselves for diverse and inclusive municipality. Created really a positive focus on that, and by having the diversity and inclusion coordinator, by having city. And when I looked up some things on diversity and inclusion, the definition of inclusion is the practice or policy of providing equal access to opportunities and resources for people who might otherwise be excluded or marginalized. Only having daytime council meetings excludes work. And I would just really like for members of council to please think about the message you're sending to members of the removal. Our residents deserve an opportunity to come to these meetings if they wish. As always, you will get more people come out for certain topics and hot topics. We've sat here for daytime meetings where we've had one member, John Robertson, a lovely who comes to almost every meeting, but there's never been a suggestion to get rid of that daytime meeting because people don't show up. So I just please ask for some inclusiveness here in our community.
Comments? Want to make a recommendation to move this forward, or are you going to end the discussion? Councilor Brown?
I recommend that we bring this back as the next meeting as a recommendation item.
Seconder? Before I ask for the question, if the concern is the hours that staff place who are here before 8:30 and sometimes are here till 9, there is the ability for half days or fluctuation and those types of things if it is a staff concern. So all in favor of moving this forward to a recommendation, please raise your hand. Contrary. We will end our last 2 years with the status quo. Ad